Good afternoon. It is August the 16th, 2018. I am Tom Owen. I am having a conversation with Carol Seifert, and we are in a small room on the second floor of Ekstrom Library at Belknap Campus at the University of Louisville. Carol, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I would like to begin by just talking about childhood. When, where, and who?
Okay. Well, my brother was born February 26, 1943. Mm-hmm. And as is with the Jewish religion, when you are born, you are named after someone who has died. Mm. And right before my brother died, my mother's father, Julius Court, K-H-O-U-R-T, mm-hmm. had died. So Julius became Julius Court Friedman. And I came along in May of 1946, and we were always close, mm-hmm. but he was always the prince in the family. My mother had a sister, and she'd had two daughters. So my mother had the only son. And so from day one, he was the prince, and everybody knew it.
And clarifying, he was 2 years
old. He's 3 years, 3 1/4 years older than I am.
So you were born just as World War II
ended.
Mm-hmm. And he was a war baby.
Right.
Yeah.
And we lived on Carson Way, which is across from Bowman Field.
From the beginning. Uh-huh. Your parents were there when you came.
They might have been on Alta Avenue when Julius was born, mm-hmm. but when I was born, they were on Carson Way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of nice families, a lot of kids on the block. So we played outside all the time with all the kids, you know. Mm-hmm. Nobody was worried that their child would be abducted. And I could not pronounce Julius for the longest time. And so I used to call him Budu. Budu.
B-B?
B-U-D-O. No, B-U-D-U. Budu.
Budu. Budu.
I think I was trying to say brother. Mm-hmm. But it came out Budu.
Budu.
And we were always close because all the kids in the neighborhood, you know, we'd go out in the street and play baseball. We'd play hide and seek. We, you know, all the stuff kids don't do today. Mm-hmm. We would ride our bikes everywhere. You know, you just knew you had to come home at dinner time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I can remember one time. I can't even think how old he was. Maybe 6, 7, something like that. We couldn't find him. And my parents were going crazy. And we were looking everywhere. And he was under the basement steps, for what reason I do not know. Hmm. But he stayed hidden until we finally found him.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Oh boy.
Yes.
Do you remember any repercussions of that?
There was a lot of screaming. Mm-hmm. A lot of screaming. Mm-hmm.
On the block there on Carson Way, were there other Jewish families, or were you a singular Jewish family?
No, there were two other families. Actually, down about four doors down, there were two daughters around our age. And across the street from them, there was a daughter and a son. The son was my age, the daughter was his age. And then two doors down from us, there was two brothers. Mm-hmm. And one was my age and one was younger.
There on Carson Way, let's hold that for a minute and go back and do some, pretty quickly, some Friedmans and some Courts.
Uh-huh.
Where are they from? Shorter term, not...
Well, my great-grandparents emigrated from Russia.
The Friedmans?
The courts,
yes, yes.
The Courts and the Krenitzes.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it would have been the Krenitzes.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess there was one pogrom too many for them in mm-hmm. Russia, and they just picked up stakes. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know how they got to Louisville, mm-hmm. but my grandmother, who was three at the time, she had originally 11 brothers and sisters.
Oh, my goodness.
Hmm. And some died young. Mm-hmm. I'm named for one of them, Charles. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing is that with my grandmother, okay, having all these siblings, she had two girls. And each of those girls had two children. So quickly, what was a big family mm-hmm. shrunk to almost nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we would visit we had an Aunt Charney, and we would visit Uncle Joe and Aunt Helen. And then there was one court that changed the spelling of his name. He was the only one, and it was K-O-R-T.
Oh, the Venetian blind people?
No, he didn't do that, but I don't know why he changed his money,
sure.
his name.
Sure.
But he did. And so when my grandfather died, my grandmother moved in with us.
Hmm.
So I shared a room with my grandmother my life until she died. And Julius had his own room.
Okay, so you were sharing a room. And it was a three-bedroom, small three-bedroom
uh-huh,
room?
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
And this is Grandmother Court.
Yes. This was my mother's mother,
mm-hmm.
who had married Julius Court. She had been a Krenitz, and she married mm-hmm. a Court.
Were the Courts also from Russia, you think? Do you have a feel at all?
Probably.
Yeah. Is there a Court family in Louisville now? I'm not familiar with that name at all.
No, they've all. I think they've all died.
Hmm.
All the family that was
that would have been a Court
would have been mm-hmm. related to the Courts mm-hmm. have died.
But they were a Louisville family.
Yes.
Yeah. As were the Krenitzes.
Yes.
Yeah. And spell Krenitz?
K-R-E-N-I-T-Z.
Krenitz. Yes. Okay. All right. And now about the Freedmans. Who are they?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because there was my father was a pharmacist, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. There was another Freedman who was a pharmacist at the Douglas Loop, mm-hmm. Coleman Freedman. And mm-hmm. everybody thought we were related, but we weren't. My father, it was a very sad story. My father's mother either died in childbirth or very soon after that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really raised by an aunt and uncle who had wanted to adopt him.
Mm-hmm.
But his father, who hated my father because he blamed him for the wife's death, was just horrible to him. Horrible.
Mm-hmm.
I only remember seeing him two or three times at the most. He stayed in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. And that's where your dad was raised?
Yes, but he came to Louisville to go to pharmacy school.
Yes, yes.
And he met my mother, mm-hmm. and they got married. Mm-hmm. And
the aunt and uncle that raised your dad,
they
were also in
Cincinnati.
In Cincinnati as well, I see. So he came here for the Louisville School of Pharmacy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Okay. And well, as long as we're talking about your dad, talk about where he did pharmacy work.
Well, he first was he had a pharmacy at Hickory and Burnett,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and right near Cosair Children's Hospital,
mm-hmm.
the old Cosair mm-hmm. Children's mm-hmm. Hospital. And every year for the Cosair picnic, we would all go.
Mm-hmm.
And Mother would always put two nickels or whatever it was on the whatever she was betting on. She mm-hmm. would always put two, so there was one for each of us. And we loved that. And my mother didn't learn to drive until we were probably maybe 13. No. Probably, he would have probably been 9. And I would have been 6. But anyway, so it was a stick shift.
Mm-hmm.
It's an old Ford stick shift. And you know, Eastern Parkway has hills.
Yes, yes.
And she was a white knuckle driver, because if she had to stop on a hill, she was scared to death that she was going to roll back and hit somebody. And I do, I remember that vividly.
Yeah. So your dad was at Hickory and Burnett as a pharmacist.
And then he left there and opened a pharmacy in Shively, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. On Cane Run Road. Mm-hmm. And it had a soda fountain. Mm. And the one thing I remember about my dad is every Christmas and the day after Christmas, we would work in the store. Mm-hmm. Because everybody would come in for a late minute gift, and there was a perfume called Evening in Paris, and it had a cobalt blue bottle, and that was a big seller. And then after Christmas, batteries.
So you were open on Christmas?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. We were.
And busy enough that everybody was thrown into the breach.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we did. And we both worked as soda jerks, mm-hmm. and Julius one time did not click the malt thing up, the mm-hmm. shaker, and so when he turned it on, it flew across the room with malt going everywhere. Oh, I just remember that, yeah.
Oh, my. And so both of you were working in the drugstore?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We did.
And in both cases, your dad was a solo owner pharmacist?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. In those days, you could. The competition would have been Taylor drugstores. Mm-hmm. But you didn't have CVS, you didn't have Walgreens. I mean, it was coming. Mm-hmm. And, my father would have, probably had to go work for one of them. But he owned the place, and then he died very suddenly, very young.
Just absolutely fell over and died?
Well, it's an interesting story. My father suffered what in those days was called manic depression. And when he was manic, he was great. He was fun. It was so much fun to be around him. But for every mania, you have three times as long as a depression. And when he would have depressions, it would be so bad that he was incapacitated completely. And Julius and I argued over the fact that I said my father was wearing a green robe, and Julius said, no, it was maroon. But we had the same exact memory of him crying in the bedroom. So this particular night, Mother and Dad's room was on the first floor, and our rooms were on the second. And for a reason I do not know, I crept down the steps and decided to sleep in the den, which is right next to their bedroom. And I could hear my mother. She was in the bathroom. She's brushing her teeth. Dad was asleep, I thought. And I heard what sounded like a snort. Mm-hmm. And then I heard her going in and saying, Martin, Martin, mm-hmm. Martin. And the next thing I remember is the police were there with a stretcher. I mean, he had died. He'd had a coronary thrombosis, and it blew out his heart.
Oh, my goodness.
And my mother was very resentful of psychiatrists, because she felt that once he was labeled bipolar, which he had, mm-hmm. it runs in the family, mm-hmm. it runs in his family, mm-hmm. the Weinberg family. Once he was diagnosed that way, then anytime he had a complaint, it was, oh, it's in your head, it's in your head, it's mm-hmm. in your head. He even went, his depressions were so bad that he had shock treatments.
Oh my God.
And they were not the kind of shock treatments they are today, but it would help a little. And my mother was scared that he had taken pills and killed himself, because he was a pharmacist. Mm. He certainly could have access to that. So she had an autopsy, which is not done in the Jewish religion. You do not do an autopsy, because the body has to be intact for when the Messiah comes.
Yes.
She had an autopsy because she had to know, and they told her the whole wall of his heart blew out, and he also had cancer.
Oh my goodness.
And he'd been having angina attacks, mm-hmm. and just blew it off.
Yeah.
So I went upstairs the next day. Mother wasn't back yet, and I said to Julius, I said, you're not going to believe this. Either I had a horrible dream or Dad died last night. And just about that, finished those words coming out of my mouth, my mother came home and, in fact, said yes.
She didn't come up. She went to the hospital.
She went to the hospital with him. And she came back.
Oh, I see.
And said he had died. And I was 15. And Julius had been in his first year of college at U of K because he wanted to be an architect.
Uh-huh.
And U of L does not,
yes, right,
did not have an architecture program. And so, I mean, it was horrible.
Yeah.
Because what happened is, well, first, you know, in the Jewish religion, it's like a wake times 7 days. Shiva is 7 days, and people come over, and they visit with you, and they bring food, and all of that. You have all of that tumult. And then the week's up, everybody goes back to their life, which is normal.
And where's the body?
Oh, no, no. In the Jewish religion, you're buried very quickly.
Okay, okay.
No.
But there's extended period of mourning.
Right.
Yes.
You are we don't embalm.
Mm.
So you're buried very quickly.
Mm.
And then from the day of the burial, you go out 7 days, and that's the Shiva.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I can remember when all of that was over, I can remember sitting at the table, and all you heard was the clanking of the forks and knives on the plate, because Dad wasn't there telling all these stories. You know, as I say, when he wasn't in a deep depression, he was fun. He was a lot of fun.
A storyteller or a raconteur.
Yeah.
Or a,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, he liked the horses, and we used to always go to the track with him. And I can remember, in those days, you know, it wasn't a computer. You actually got a ticket when you bet.
Yeah.
And Julius and I would be climbing all over Churchill Downs picking up tickets. And we would come home and we'd say, look, we'd come back to them, look how many tickets we've got. And of course, then Dad had deflate the bubble by saying those are the losing tickets.
Now, how did he, as a solo pharmacist, in bed, in a season of depression, going to the track, who's running the shop? Who's running the store?
Well, when he had another pharmacist worked for him.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, so when the, you know, spring and fall, Churchill Downs, I mean, he didn't go every day.
I understand. Yeah.
But he liked to go. Yeah. He liked to go to the to bet on the horses. But yes, and in fact, the guy that had been the pharmacist bought the store from my mother.
Oh, I see. Would you, your mom, as related, being with your dad with that issue, would you consider her long-suffering? Or...
Well, I will say this. My brother and I both suffer from major anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that came from two reasons. One, my mother was always anxious that Daddy would fall into one of these depressions. Mm-hmm. And two, her mother lived with us, who I shared a room with. And Grandma Minnie was not nice about my father. Never said a nice word about my father. And I remember when Dad died, I was in my room, and she said something nice about him. And I said, you know, Grandma, that's a little, you're a day late and a dollar short. I said, he can't hear you now.
Mm.
And so I don't want to hear you telling me how nice he was now that he's dead.
Mm.
And so there was a lot of friction between my mother and her mother.
Mm.
And she favored the sister that lived next door to us, but that sister didn't take her in. My mother took her in.
You had an aunt live next door to you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Aunt and uncle and our two cousins.
Oh, right. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Were those kids close?
Yes, we were very close.
Yeah.
We were close as kids, yes.
Are they still around?
One of the daughters is not.
Mm-hmm.
She died of cancer. And yes, the other daughter was in New York.
Mm-hmm. But just pulling just a little bit on a thread, you were saying you believe in some sense, the tensions of the house with your dad's condition, your grandmother, and your mother, in some sense, being an arbiter, I guess, in some way, at least, between your grandmother, when she was living with you, at least, that kind of created some coming through anxiety that lingered for both you and Julius.
Oh, I definitely think. And I also think, because actually, we're both bipolar, but we have never suffered the depths of the depression my father had. Because psychiatry has come a long way. There are medicines that work. And so we would have depressions, but not anything. Not incapacitating. You could still manage your life with it.
Go back to Carson Way. I'm hearing now cousins next door, and they were Jewish.
Yes.
Yeah, they were
Jewish.
They would be among the Jewish families, the few Jewish families. Being Jewish in a largely non-Jewish community area.
Well, the other people who weren't Jewish, now that I think about it, there's 6 Jewish families lived on the street, and then a 7th moved in later. But all the other people were Catholic. And so, it's very close,
Yeah.
I've always said, if you listen to Gregorian chant and close your eyes, and nobody tells you that it is Gregorian chant, it sounds like Hebrew chanting. It has same cadence, very similar. And if you take Jesus out of the picture, I mean, the Catholics were like the Jews in wanting a large family. They were very family-oriented. We had one day to confess all our sins, which was Yom Kippur, and y'all had every day. Y'all took it to an extreme, but, the little hat, the kippah that we wear, the Pope wears. So there is a lot of similarity.
And the Protestant majority looked as different, Roman Catholics, as different Jewish. No question. So in that sense, there's some sharing, I think.
Yeah.
So the notion of being an odd person out on Carson Way is not an issue.
No.
Yeah. Talk about family faith, both where and what.
We belong to Adith Sharon Synagogue, which is on Woodburn, which is a conservative synagogue.
Was your earliest memory they were on Woodburn?
No, my earliest memory, they were on Brook Street, which is now the Unity Temple, which I got to see because there was a wedding there, and I asked if I could go in to the sanctuary, and they let me, and it's very, very similar. We were on Brook Street, so you would go to synagogue on a Saturday, and then you would walk from Brook Street to 4th Street, and all the kids would hang out. You did it. We didn't go every Saturday. We went every Saturday there was a bar. Back then it would have been only bar mitzvahs. But yeah, everybody did that.
So you would walk from Brook and College or Brook and whatever, and you would walk down to 4th Street, busy.
Yeah, we'd go to
city,
a movie.
City center, 4th Street.
Yeah. Right, we'd go to a movie, we'd eat at Kunz's a lot. And then by 5 o'clock you'd take the bus to go up to the Hayburn Building on Broadway, and you'd catch the bus and
go home.
And once again, you didn't have a helicopter parent following you around. Nobody thought your child was going to be taken away.
Was your dad participant as fully as your mother in these things?
No. No. Because he worked, between all the hours he worked, that was actually my brother never gave up on this criticism, that his father didn't teach him how to use a hammer, how to build things, and I don't know why he expected that he would, my father wasn't, he didn't know how to build anything, But Julius always resented that fact. Julius was closer to my mother than he was to my father. Mm-hmm. There was that mother-son thing going on there. It's different from mother-daughter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I once said to my mother much later, I said, you know, you love Julius more than me. And she said, no, I don't. I said, oh, yes, you do. I can cite you chapter and verse.
Did you say that with Edge feeling resentment, or were you just...
I was just saying it.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't resent my brother. I was never jealous of my brother.
Mm.
But he was the prince in the family, and there was just no two ways about it.
Well, isn't there a little sense, as a person from the outside, that you've already alluded to it, there was no bas mitzvah.
No.
And so there was a bar mitzvah.
Yes.
So you are raising up a male who's going to read in synagogue.
Right.
I mean, I'm just thinking about
it. Yes. Now, by the time I had my daughters, they had bat mitzvahs, exactly, mm-hmm. read Torah, because we're a conservative synagogue.
Yes.
We got a rabbi at the time. The rabbi we had growing up was Rabbi Gittleman, and when he spoke, it sounded like God was coming. I mean, everybody was scared to death of him, but when he was going to be emeritus, we hired a new rabbi who only had daughters, and was very active in the conservative movement. And by that time, the conservative movement was allowing girls to be bat mitzvah.
Mm-hmm.
On a Saturday, not on a Friday night.
Mm.
And he said, I'll only come if they can have their bat mitzvahs on a Saturday morning, just like a boy would have a bar mitzvah. And they agreed, and that's why, you know, my daughters read Hebrew beautifully. I went back as an adult and learned Hebrew and learned to read Torah and Haftorah.
Mm.
But I didn't. It was never offered to me.
Oh, yes.
As a child.
Yeah. So you did not go to Hebrew school after school. Mm-hmm. Did Julius?
Oh, yeah.
So he learned, did he ever stand in synagogue?
Oh, my God, yes. I can remember distinctly the morning of his bar mitzvah, he drank some orange juice and threw it up. That's the anxiety level, you know. But he did fine. No, he did well.
Yeah.
He did well. He had lots of friends, you know, the Jewish friends that were all bar and bat mitzvah. My brother veered from Jewish people after he became a graphic designer.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had one friend who was Jewish. But in those days, if you were a Jewish boy, your parents wanted you to become a doctor, a dentist, a lawyer, an accountant.
Mm-hmm.
Artist was not amongst the ones, you know, how are you going to make a living? You're going to be an artist. You know? Now, architect, it would have been okay, but, you know, when he came to the University of Louisville, he went into the graphic design school.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that. Let me kind of, in my own mind, kind of make a little place that I can understand. So your father has died and you are 15,
mm-hmm.
and he is just headed to UK or at UK?
Yeah, Daddy died in January, and that was the year, that's Julius's first year at U of K.
So he was already at UK?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess he was 19. He had completed one semester.
Is it, why did Julius come back from UK?
You know, I really don't know. I have a theory, but we really never talked about it. And the theory is that Julius liked being in Louisville. He liked being at home, even though he didn't live at home. Mm-hmm. This was his hometown. He was familiar with this. And he had many opportunities to go elsewhere. And he never did. He never left Louisville.
Throughout his entire career.
His entire career. He was comfortable. And that this speaks to anxiety levels.
Mm-hmm.
Like, coming down here today, Dean Fox gave me directions. But I haven't been on the university campus in many a year.
Sure.
And, you know, I left really early in case I got lost.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's how we would always think. Mm-hmm. And even though intellectually I know worry is stupid, we worried. And I think he just wanted to be close to home. Hmm. Even though he might have lived with us that year, but after that, my mother made the fatal error of saying, well, now you're the man in the family. And he he didn't want that title.
Even though a prince is a male.
Yes, yes. And he kind of, he started, hanging around with other people who were in the field.
This is pop psychology, and I cannot help but pull on that thread just a little bit, and then I know where I want to go next. But going back to the image, the anger, the resentment of my father never taught me to use a hammer. Did that play out literally in some manifestations throughout Julius's life?
Well, throughout his life, he would mention that.
Yeah.
He said, other people, they know how to build things. And I'm thinking, you're an artist, though. What are you?
Did he ever learn to use a hammer? Did he ever build things?
He didn't build anything, but he could hang a picture on the wall. When they bought the house at Hampden Court, it was a slum.
Yeah.
And they took 6 months off, he and his partner, to redo the house. Mm-hmm. So he obviously could do certain things.
Yeah.
He could do anything with a car. Mm-hmm. He knew he had a Model A Ford, and he loved cars, and he knew how to make that car work. Mm-hmm. And he had a 1950 pickup truck. So he loved cars. He always knew about that. But I don't know why. It was obviously a sore point in his life. He mentioned it repeatedly. And the other thing he mentioned repeatedly that I was very close to saying, you got to stop this shtick, mm-hmm. which is, I think my parents found me because they weren't into art, and I am, and my sister is. And I personally, they weren't into art in the way that they went to museums all the time, but their house was decorated beautifully. They had beautiful antiques. It just wasn't something. I bet you if you went into any middle-class Jewish home at mm-hmm. that time, they weren't focused on art. And mm-hmm. and he had this gift, and it was a gift. Mm-hmm. And like I said, people just have it.
He was quoted at one point as saying, a stranger must have left me on the front step.
Yes, he did that all the time. And I was very close, the last time he did it, of going up to him and saying, you've got to stop this. Mm-hmm. It's very disrespectful to me and your parents and your grandparents. Mm-hmm. You don't know. There might have been someone in Russia that was an artist who was a Krenitz, and you've inherited that. Mm-hmm. You don't know that. Mm-hmm. But your parents loved you. And they permitted you. They didn't give you any argument when you said you wanted to be a graphic designer.
Which in the Jewish community was...
Yeah.
All right.
All his friends became doctors, dentists, lawyers, and accountants. He was the oddball out.
Yeah, sure.
And they didn't stop him. They didn't say, don't do it. They didn't say, When my father died, he had two insurance policies of $10,000 each. And it was to pay for our college education. And back then, $10,000 would pay you 4 years of college. Mm-hmm. And we each got a degree in 4 years with that money. Mm-hmm. Couldn't have done it today, but that's what we did. And as I say, I don't know why, it was a sarcastic jab at his parents, our mm-hmm. parents. Mm-hmm. And they didn't deserve it. Mm-hmm. They just didn't deserve that. And
but it was a way of highlighting his unique talent.
Well, I always say my mother named him Julius, and the only other Julius I knew was Julius Caesar and Julius LaRosa. You don't find that name
Yeah.
It's not on the top 10, even though names have come back into vogue, like Sophie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Julius has not come back. So he had a unique name, which he was given. And he had a really good, you know, they provided a wonderful childhood. Yes, our dad had depression, and that was not good, but we had a good life.
Sure.
And I just, he would say that to, he says, well, where did we get our taste in art? I said, I don't know. I don't know. But we have it.
Let's go back. Let's get you through high school and into college and pull the art thread, your interest in art, through that period of your life.
Well, Julius could draw. In fact, he had to take a, to get a graphic designer, he had to take a class in a drawing class. And we had three of his drawings that he had done. They hung in the den, and they were beautiful. He didn't stay with drawing. I mean, he went to photography. And I don't know, we just had an eye on how to do things, or how to decorate things, or, you know, we loved art, and it did not have to match the sofa, which down the road when we had the gallery, that was one of the things. Well, it doesn't match my sofa. And I would always say, if someone gave you a Rembrandt, would you take it? And it didn't match your sofa?
A client coming into the gallery?
Yes. Those were only times when I got annoyed.
Did you have an interest in art in high school?
I couldn't draw a lick. Never could. So I never took any art classes. The story I tell everybody is when Julius and I were little kids, you know, the TVs were very small. And there was a game called Winky Dink. And you put a green plastic fit over the screen. And there were 8 crayons. Julius gave me purple, and he took the other 7. Purple never drew on the odd occasion. But what they would do is they'd be drawing, you would follow their lines.
On the screen.
On the screen.
With the plastic over.
Yes. So I always said that that's where his talent started.
Making a picture on the television screen.
And he, you know, even as a kid, I mean, he did murals. He did a mural in our living room. He did a, in his room, he had a gigantic tree.
Your mother would let him paint on the wall?
Oh, yeah, paint on the walls.
Was it decent work that he did?
Yeah.
As a 14-year-old?
Yeah.
Not as a 6-year-old, not 8-year-old, but a 14-year-old.
No, he was he was well into his teens.
Yeah.
But no, she'd let him do it. Yeah. I mean, he had that interest. I mean, we made a good team because Julius was never very verbal. He could talk a lot, but as to sit down and write a letter or do something like that or do a resume. I did all of that. And I would say he's visual and I'm verbal. And it worked perfectly. But we both really liked I think one of the things is we liked pretty things. You know, objects that were pretty. And we've always wanted both of us to have our nest, no matter how big or small, had to be pretty. And you know, if you've ever been in his house on Hampden Court.
I was, but I forgot.
I mean, it was an 1840s house that was huge. And so it could hold massive amount of quantity of art. And, but I didn't have the talent that he had to be able to reproduce something. When he was in high school, he used to do cartoons for all his girlfriends. That was his thing.
Were you both at Atherton? Both at Seneca?
No, we both at Seneca.
Both at Seneca,
He started out in Fern Creek. His first year was in Fern Creek because Seneca hadn't. But he was the first graduating class of Seneca High School. And so his sophomore through senior was at Seneca. And then I went to Seneca.
And then what'd you do?
I was really good in history and English. Mm-hmm. I love history and I love English. Mm-hmm. Not so great in science and math, mm-hmm. but you know, tolerably good. Mm-hmm. I made it through algebra too. Mm-hmm. But I love to read. I love to read history. And you know, to imagine what it was like to be a pioneer going across this country mm-hmm. on iron wheels.
Yeah.
With the threat of being killed by Indians. Mm-hmm. Now, I know Julius and I would not have been amongst those people. Mm-hmm. We'd have stayed put wherever we were. That would have been way too much.
Back to the nest.
Yeah, thing. And the nest was important.
Yeah.
And
so did you go to college? Did you go to university?
I went to...
Using insurance money, which
I'm hearing. Yes, I went to IU mm-hmm. for 2.5 years, mm-hmm. getting a double major in history and English. The Christmas of my junior year, I got mono. And I got it so badly that I could not go back to school. Mm-hmm. And so I was bedridden for like 6 weeks. And mm-hmm. then they sent me down to IU. I had to go to IU Southeast to take my finals. Mm-hmm. And then I just said, you know, what the hell? I'm just going to go to U of L and finish mm-hmm. up. I had a year and a half, so mm-hmm. I did. I finished up, and then I taught school for 2 years, and then I decided I taught in the Newburgh area, and they couldn't read. Mm-hmm. So I decided I'd get my master's in reading, and I got a grant, and I finished 1 year, and gave birth that August to my daughter, and didn't come back and finish it, which...
You were back for the reading degree at U of L?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's pause just a second, go back, and thinking about your mom. Mm-hmm. Your dad died. There were two insurance policies with you as the beneficiaries, mm-hmm. you and Julius. Mm-hmm. So it was your money, and it was understood. But was there enough reserve? She did not work.
Well, this was a very, very difficult time, and it bred some resentment with Julius. When my dad died, I mean, we were not a wealthy family by any means. Mm. Here she has this drugstore.
Yeah.
But she had to get two pharmacists to always be running it, and she worked every day. She would go from Carson Way to Shively,
yeah,
every day. And so she wasn't home like she used to be, and Julius resented that. But what was she gonna do?
Well, wait a minute, he's in college.
I know, he still resented it. He still resented that she had to go to work.
Oh, that was that a class, a social class issue, or was it... I came home one day and Mom wasn't there, and I...
Yeah, I think it was that Mom was no longer there like she had used to be. Of course, I don't know why I was upset over that. He wasn't there, but he did voice that complaint. Mm-hmm. And she kept the drugstore maybe 10 years
mm-hmm.
and then sold it.
Mm-hmm.
She remarried, and then he died. And so I said to her, we're going to put on your forehead, caution, this woman may be hazardous to your health.
Yeah.
So. And Julius always wished that she had married someone that had a lot of money, that could, you know, take her places and do things. And he never figured that maybe he could be that person.
That was where my thought quickly went.
Yeah, no. He did not, no.
No, that just wasn't him.
No, it was not him at all.
Was that second marriage decent enough for her?
Yeah, he was a nice guy. Hmm. He was definitely a grandfather to my two children,
mm-hmm.
and they loved him. He was mm-hmm. very nice to him. He was a sweet guy.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
The worst thing that I remember, and I can speak to it personally, is that my parents had 3 or 4 couples that they always were going out with. Mm-hmm. Always, always, mm-hmm. always, always.
Mm-hmm.
And when my dad died, they quit calling.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to say, when I'm divorced, and when I was divorced, no one would ask an extra woman to a party. They'll ask an extra man every day of the week. So I finally got a shirt and it said, I'm not after your spouse and I can afford my own dinner. But it still didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, I had one couple that continuously called and we would go out. But no, as an extra woman, as my mother was an extra woman, those women just disappeared.
Hmm.
And it was so painful to her. Because back then, you didn't have divorce like we do now.
Yeah.
And he died at 47.
Yeah.
You know, so she was young. And that was hard to watch.
Hmm.
That was very hard to watch. And, you know, she became somewhat bitter about it, and I don't blame her.
Sure, sure, you know. Sure. So you mentioned a little girl being born. You'd come back to U of L. You worked on a degree in in reading.
I did. I got 1 year done.
Was there anyone here at U of L who you remember as an instructor or a professor that you liked especially, or was it just a matter of getting it done, getting it through, and you obviously weren't hanging around as a co-ed, I guess.
No, yeah. No. I can't remember my statistics teacher, but I liked him because he got me to look at it as a language.
Mm-hmm.
And once he did that, I could do it.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did like that class. And I can't remember the woman's name who I was a graduate assistant to. She was from Tennessee, and we were in some kind of library, but nothing like this.
Mm-hmm.
She was nice. And as I say, unfortunately, or fortunately, I was married to a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would say, I'd say, I want to go back and finish it. Well, who's going to take care of the children? Who's going to take care of Karen? I'm not going to do that. I'm busy.
Mm-hmm.
So I never, and then I started up again, and then Rudy died, her second husband, and then I had mother all to myself to take care of, and after the second time I thought, you know.
So you did come back and gave it another swing.
I gave it another swing.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and in those, in that day and age, if you were a woman, okay, you became a teacher, you became a nurse, maybe a speech pathologist. But you didn't have a, you weren't looking at it as I'm going to have this career.
Mm-hmm.
And Julius used to tell me all the time, he would say, you know, it's too bad you were born when you were born. If you'd been born later, because I was at the cusp, the women's movement started as I was graduating from college.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never thought about being anything other than a mother. And then when my Melissa was in the second grade, my younger daughter was in the second grade, Julius knocked on the door and he said, look, I'm splitting up the business. This guy's leaving and I need you some help for a couple of weeks until I find someone. Will you do it? And I said, yes, as long as I can be off if the kids are sick. Be off in the afternoons when I have to pick them up at Cherokee Triangle because they were at St. Francis.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like 4 o'clock. So what turned into 2 weeks was 22 years.
Oh my goodness. Huh.
Yeah.
When he knocked on your door, were you single by that time?
Or? Oh, no. I was still married.
Yeah. You were married a good number of years?
I was married 37 years.
37 years?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my kids were grown. They were in their 30s.
Oh my goodness.
They were grown, married, and had children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Talk a little bit about your two daughters, and then we'll pick up with Julius and knocking on the door.
Well, I had two daughters, Karen and Melissa, and they're 2 grades apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to have this thing that I would say to them when they were in high school. I said, "Your father's a doctor, so there's no business that you can inherit. So you best find a job that will afford you the lifestyle that you want."
Mm.
you don't have to pay. We'll pay for college, we'll pay for graduate school. Mm-hmm. But at the end of that period, you're on your own, mm-hmm. you know. So last Thanksgiving, I'm up visiting the kids. I always go up for Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And Karen's oldest child says to me, "You know, Mom, Nana, Mother's always telling me that I need to get a job that will afford me the lifestyle that I want. And I don't know why she says that, but she says it all the time." And I said, "You know where she got that?" And he said, "No." I said, "Nana told her that. Because your mother, like you, mm-hmm. likes expensive things." Mm-hmm. So she went into business. And she's made a lot of money from the day she got out of graduate school. Hmm. Now, your aunt, Melissa, yeah. will only buy something if it's on sale, unless I'm paying for it.
Yeah.
But if she's paying for it, it is on. She loves the hunt,
yeah.
and she's a therapist. Mm-hmm. And she can't make, in a year, what Karen probably makes in 2 days. Hmm. But they're both happy. Hmm. And I said to Max, I said, "You know, you have expensive taste." Mm-hmm. And once again, there's no business to inherit. Hmm. So you've got to find something.
Is that is Melissa a psychotherapist, a psychology
yes.
therapist?
Yes. Yeah. She had, both my girls went undergraduate to Michigan. Mm-hmm. Karen went to Cornell for this graduate program. It's called a master's in labor relations. But what it is they train people to go into human resources. Mm-hmm. And the school is so well thought of that they literally do get a job because all the companies come to that school looking for their graduates. Hmm. And Karen actually went back and talked, and gave a lecture at the school. And Melissa graduated Michigan, and then she went to NYU. She got into Columbia, but she didn't want to go to Columbia because NYU has a more clinical side to it, hmm. to their master's degree. Hmm. And so she's been a therapist. She, in fact, she was in a building right next to the World Trade Center.
Oh, my goodness.
And luckily for me, Melissa was always late. Mm-hmm. And when I saw that plane fly into the building, I called her, and I could get through then. I said, "Melissa, where are you?" She said, "I'm at home." I said, "Don't go to work."
Yeah.
She said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "You see the plane?" "Yeah." I said, "Don't go to work, Melissa. Mm-hmm. Do not go down there." And of course, just then the second mm-hmm. plane hit, and she didn't go down there.
So is your older daughter in human relations? I mean,
yes, yeah. she got her job. Michigan alumni mm-hmm. will hire Michigan alumni if everything's equal. Mm-hmm. So one of her friends sends her a wedding announcement from the New York Sunday Times. It says Klein Berkowitz, and Karen's looking at it, going, "I don't know Klein and I don't know Berkowitz," but mm-hmm. she reads the thing. And the woman had gone undergraduate to Michigan, graduate at Cornell, Karen's mm-hmm. same program. So Karen got in touch with her and said, "You know, I'm graduating, and you know, I'd love to talk to you. I'd be interested in working at Citi." This was Citibank before Travelers bought it. And they hired her. Huh. And she worked with a lady that did executive compensation, which is a real narrow field. Mm-hmm. And Karen is very precise. Mm-hmm. And so she started, and she worked for Citibank for maybe 4 years. Then she went to PepsiCo mm-hmm. and worked for another 10 years. And then she left PepsiCo to go to Foot Locker. Mm-hmm. And she's at Foot Locker. And she does executive compensation.
Hmm. Hmm.
For the comp and benefits, yeah.
Yeah. For the executives of the company?
For everybody.
I see.
Down to the person that's selling you the shoe in Foot Locker.
Yeah. Right.
In fact, PepsiCo makes you, when you're hired, you go out on a truck with the driver delivering the soda.
Oh my goodness.
She just had it.
Are both girls in New York City? Or metropolitan New York?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Karen and her husband and Melissa's husband all work in the city. They all commute mm-hmm. to the city every day. Mm-hmm. Melissa has her practice in her town.
In town, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The marriage of 37 years, was he Jewish?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. Yeah. I had a grandmother, and if I had a non-Jewish person over to the house, and we were sitting in the living room, she'd walk through and she'd go, there's no way I wasn't marrying someone Jewish. And I actually told that to the girls.
Yeah.
I said, I am sending you to a school that has an enormous Jewish population.
Michigan.
I said, please come home with a Jewish husband if you're going to get married. And they, Karen did. She dated her husband from freshman year on.
Huh.
And Melissa had a stint where she was with a non-Jewish person, and I told her. She said, well, he said that we could raise the children Jewish. I said, that's very nice, but his family's going to celebrate Christmas, and they're going to celebrate Easter, as they should. The grandmother spoke Italian.
Mm-hmm.
I said, there's inherent problems in any marriage, but if you go into it with two different backgrounds. So she didn't speak to me unless she spoke to me only through clenched teeth for the 2 years they were together. And then she broke up with him, not because of anything I said, it was something he did. I remember her calling up and she says, I'm going out with a guy and you're going to love him. I said, "What?" I said, how do you know I'm going to love him? And she said, his last name is Cohen.
He might be my love.
And she did admit later that when she met his family, she felt at home because the culture's the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't matter what degree of religiosity you have in the Jewish religion. There's a huge spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
But the cultural, and she said, I felt like I was with you and Dad. And I said, yeah. And that's what I was talking about. And so Karen has two boys that 17 and 15 now. And Melissa, on her first try, had identical twin boys that are 15.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with some of this myself, so
yeah.
And I passed on a few things.
Whatever you say it is, I'm glad you're taking some medication and you feel better.
We're familiar with medication, my family is.
But,
although I don't, but I probably ought to be.
A lot of people should.
There's no doubt about it. I certainly have had my struggles. Okay, so let's do one other little piece here right now. You mentioned the word religiosity, cultural Judaism, the importance of that. You, and now we're going to do a little piece of Julius here, you remained in traditional faith.
Mm-hmm.
Julius
did not.
Yeah. You want to elaborate on that just a bit?
He just moved away from it, and as I say, his friends were not, none of them. Actually, he had one Jewish friend, and she worked here, Gail Gilbert.
Oh, yes.
Fine art librarian.
Yes, yes.
That was a very close friend, and I don't know Gail's religiosity myself, but he did. They were very close.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Delinda Bowie is the person that walked you up here?
Uh-huh.
Gail Gilbert.
Oh.
Belinda told me yesterday she has the key to Gail Gilbert's house.
Oh, wow.
That close.
That's close.
Yeah, maybe every Saturday morning coffee.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, I like Gail.
Yeah.
I like Gail a lot.
But
Julius, no, he never came to synagogue with me on the high holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe two times in a very long period he came with me to say Kaddish for one or the other parent. He just, it didn't mean anything to him. Now, however, he did have a Jewish burial and he is in a Jewish cemetery. Because...
was he aware of that?
No, he wasn't. But we spent the last 26 days of his life, well, probably 24, the last two where he was unconscious. He never said anything to me about burial. So I decided, since he didn't say anything, that we would be buried together.
Yeah.
So I got plots together as close to my parents as I could, and I got a stone that has his name and dates of birth, my name, date of birth, but no date of death yet. And because he had this creek out at, on his property out in Westport, 18 Mile Creek, it's all black, which my brother always wore black, and it looks like there's a stream in the limestone going through it, and then there's going to be, if they ever finish it, a bronze egg that sits between the two of us because of his posters, Fresh Paint and the Louisville Ballet were his most famous posters. So I thought we needed an egg. and somebody said, you know, why did you bury him there? I said, because I wanted to be next to him.
Mm-hmm.
We were that close. Mm-hmm. I figured we can be close in death. And because somebody said, well, he wanted to be cremated and his ashes thrown in the spring, in the creek. I said, Jews don't cremate. And I just left it at that. I don't know about Reformed Jews, but I know conservative and Orthodox, you do not.
Are you still an AJ person?
Yes.
Yeah.
Still go.
Yeah.
And they did. Lucked out for the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
The rabbi was out of town, and the cantor, who came to visit Julius twice, brought his guitar, they sang music, and he gave the eulogy, which was beautiful, and he sang the song Forever Young, and then I gave the eulogy.
Mm-hmm.
So
does that mean that the service was not a traditional Jewish service, or was a traditional Jewish
service? It was a traditional Jewish service. He just, Cantor has done, as allowed a few times, a song, because he sings well.
I see.
But no, he came up to the hospital. With his guitar, and Julius looked at him and said, "Well, where are the Shabbos candles and the challah and the wine?" And he said, "Well, if you want me to, I can go back and get it."
That's Julius talking.
Yeah.
So he was clearly
understanding.
Cultural, yeah.
Yes.
Well, sure.
Yes, he was a cultural Jew.
Yeah.
And
Did you see any of that Judaism bubble through?
He did a couple of posters that were Jewish in nature. One was for the Holocaust, and one was, I don't know what the other one was for, but I got him a piece of the Torah that he could reproduce. You have to find a piece that's, I think, only in the Book of Esther, where God is not mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And he did those two. But I don't think it was a driving force. I don't think he would never deny that he was Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
But it did not play that much of a role in his life.
But by contrast, it has been important to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've always liked being Jewish. I think it's a very ethical religion, and I just like it.
Sure, sure. Let's go back to the, and then I think maybe we'll do maybe 15 more minutes and might do a little more.
Yeah.
We're about an hour in.
Okay.
We can do this again, and I'd love to do it again and do a little more with the seasons of that. Was it 22 years that you worked together?
Yes.
22 years that you worked with Jewish. So we'll do a little more, considerably more with that.
Okay.
But let's go back to the knock on the door. You had daughters in school. You were married to a physician. He was saying you're responsible for certainly raising these kids because I'm busy, and Julius had lost a collaborator or a business partner?
Business partner.
Who's that?
Franklin Ross.
Franklin Ross.
Well, originally Julius was with Nathan Feldy.
Yes, I saw that in the clip. Yeah.
And they were very, very close.
Mm-hmm.
And Nathan just decided at some point because he's brilliant, that he wanted to go back to school. He went back to MIT, mm-hmm. got a graduate degree, then worked in computers. He was way up the ladder in 9X. And then he and his wife had children. And at some point, he said to his wife, "I'm done. I want to stay home with the kids." And she was a wedding photographer, so I guess she yeah. did that. And later, he got a job. He teaches at Northeastern mm-hmm. University. And they were extraordinarily close. Mm-hmm. Julius was very unhappy when Nathan left.
Non-Jewish. Nathan is non-Jewish. Mm-hmm. Met at U of L, maybe, perhaps?
I think so.
I feel like I remember. I was actually wandering through U of L in 61, 2, came back 67. And I feel like somewhere in there, I remember Nathan Feldy. Yeah. Did you say Feldy?
Feldy, F-E-L-D-E. Yeah.
I remember him. And actually, out of curiosity, I looked him up online yesterday and saw what he had done through his career. And I had read in a clipping that Julius and Nathan were partners. So they kind of began and even began with apartments in the Hampton place.
Yes, yeah. they lived there. Yeah. And in fact, when Julius died, Nathan was in Poland. And he desperately tried to get back while Julius was still alive, but mm-hmm. he didn't. But he was here for the funeral. Mm-hmm. And he stayed at the house. I always said he could stay at the house. He slept in Julius's bed. And he came back probably 4 times. And we would talk about Julius. And he said he had a lot of things, emotional things, attached to the house and everything, and he just needed time to go through that, work through that. Hmm. And so when he left the last time, he took Julius's bed.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I gave him Julius's bed. Huh. And then, we'll get back to this, but then I get a call from Nathan about 6 months ago. And he says, because at Northeastern University, all the students go abroad. Mm-hmm. And Nathan was going to Berlin to teach a class. But he stopped in London to see his kid. His oldest kid lives there. And then he went to, by the time he got to Berlin, he could hardly stand up. And they told him, "You got to go home." They put him on a plane back to Boston, to Brigham Hospital. Mm-hmm. Turns out, he has stomach cancer. So he sends me this thing. He says, "I don't know if it was the barbecue," because he wanted barbecue when he was here, "or Julius is lonely and he needs me. But I've got this stomach cancer." So I text him back. I said, "Oh, no, you're not leaving." I said, "I can't have another person leave me. I just can't." Yeah. And they caught it in time. And he's on medication, and he's doing pretty well.
Oh, good, good.
Yes.
Good, good, good.
But when Nathan left, there was a guy named Franklin Ross.
Yeah.
And he and Julius were together. I can't even tell you how many years they were together, mm-hmm. but both of them had really big egos, and Julius would always be deprecating, but mm-hmm. he did have a big ego. mm-hmm. And they parted ways, and they let go of the secretary.
Help me. Franklin got moved out.
Yes.
Did his own thing, but there was a secretary that worked for both of them.
And Julius, they let her go.
Oh, I see.
Because.
And now we're getting to the knock on the door.
The knock on the door.
Because yeah. The secretary was no longer employed just for Julius.
Yeah. Yeah. No one was there.
Yeah.
So I said, okay. And what eventually, how it evolved, is that I did all the bookwork, mm-hmm. bookkeeping, and I was smart enough to know when we started wholesaling the posters, because Julius never made money as a graphic designer, not much. You know, he had an okay life. But when I started wholesaling the posters all over the world, I mean, money was just coming in. And it was during the Carter years, which meant if you had money, you made money. If you had to borrow money, you were up a creek.
Yeah, 12, 14%.
So I was buying commercial paper at 16% every month, turning it over. And I was buying AAA municipal bonds, non-taxable, at 10.5%. And then I was buying certain stocks. So Julius would have never taken the time to do that.
With the money, with the profit.
The profit that was coming in off the posters.
Yeah.
And
so you invested that money.
Mm-hmm.
Was that his money? Your money?
No, it's his money. I worked, originally I worked for artwork. I didn't get a salary.
Oh, really?
No, I just worked for artwork. And then at some point I said, you know, you're just going to have to pay me.
Where were you living at the time? Where was your house?
When he first came, I was on Clayton Road off Alameda.
Oh, yes. So you didn't come forward to Hampton Place. Yeah.
We worked at Hampton Court for a long time.
Hampton Court, yeah.
And I remember I worked in the alcove in the foyer.
Mm-hmm.
And Julius had some crazy-ass people that were friends. I mean, really, some of them were very scary.
Mm-hmm.
And finally I said to him, you know, and he had many ex-girlfriends. I said, I'm going to take the first bullet because I'm going to be the person they see first. So I'm going to work in the same room as you. I have a 50-50 shot that maybe I won't get killed. And he agreed to it. So then we were in a big room. He had we were across from each other.
Mm.
And we stayed there. And then one day he said, you know, I'm tired of working in the basement, because we also worked down in the basement.
Yeah.
And he says, what do you think about doing a gallery?
Hmm.
And I said, we can try it, which is what we did. We had the whole, where the Fraser Museum is, we had the entire second floor. And of course, it was a beautiful gallery, just beautiful. But Main Street didn't look like it does today.
Yeah.
There was no foot traffic, and people would come and they would love everything. Oh, it's so beautiful, it's so beautiful, it's so beautiful. Not buy anything. And we would have different shows and we would sell certain things, but not to the extent we should have been. And we had this joke. They either come in and it has to match their sofa, or I like it but my spouse doesn't. And the third was, is this a good investment?
Mm.
So I would say no to the investment, only if you buy blue chip art, and even then, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Your guy could fall out of favor and you would get nothing. And I said, art is the emotion that the artwork evokes in you. So if it evokes emotion in you and it doesn't in your husband, you should still buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it, and he should do that to some piece that he likes.
Mm-hmm.
I said, if you liked Elvis paintings on velvet and they evoked an emotion in you, that's art. That's what art is. It's the emotional attachment to the piece.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I could have been talking to these filing cabinets.
Well, now, clarifying, a gallery is a place where we're selling more than the artwork of Julius Friedman.
Oh, no, we had international.
Oh, yeah, so you had artists. How do you, just out of curiosity, how do you get international artists to be interested in placing art at your place?
Well, we would do shows. Like, I curated a show, it was called the Teapot Show,
mm-hmm.
and I would send letters all over the country, and people either said yay or nay,
mm-hmm.
and submitted things, and that's how we did it. And then certain artists knew Julius, Julius maybe had bought a piece of theirs, and they would be willing to show. And even it was less money than if you'd gone to a big city. But, and I will say this, and I know it's part of the university, but the Speed Museum
It's not part of the university.
Oh,
it just
good.
Happens to be on this group.
Okay. Well, this,
I think they pay a dollar a year since 1927.
Speed Museum, I've always had a difficult time with, because they have a group of people who are wealthy, who they take all over the world.
I've heard that.
To visit artist studios, and of course they buy, because this piece, you know, I talked to the artist, yada, 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 you know, all this crap. And so consequently, the people who have money in this town would never buy a piece of art in this town because they don't think it's good enough. The people who love it would stand lovingly looking at whatever piece it was, don't have the money to afford it. And I blame the Speed for convincing these people, oh, the town you live in, you know, their art sucks. And I never liked them for that. And when Julius died, you know, the archives wanted his stuff. Various people, Fraser, nary a call from the Speed Museum. And Julius had a very large ceramic collection that was really good. He had a lot of good
stuff.
That he had bought over the years. They never called. Nothing. And so my protest is I won't go to the Speed. Every time my girlfriend called, let's go see the exhibit. I said, no.
Even though some of them might be interesting.
I said, it could be interesting, but I'll just go to the museums when I visit.
Give me a feel. I'm headed toward wrapping things up for this time. Give me a feel for what year it was that this guy by the name of Ross moved out. Secretary was dismissed.
Okay, let's see. Melissa was born in 73, and she was probably 1977.
77. Okay.
Yeah.
So 1977, and who's living in Hampton Place when you go to work there?
Julius had the first floor, and his partner Jerry Looney had the second floor.
Business partner,
yes.
Artistic collaborator,
No, Jerry was just, it was Nathan, Jerry, and Julius who originally bought the house. So when Nathan left, Julius bought out Nathan's share, and he had the first floor in the basement, and Jerry had the second floor.
And what, Jerry lived there and worked there? He was an artist
No, he wasn't an artist. He lived there, he didn't work there.
Oh, I see. No. So partner just means co-owner of the house.
Right, he was a co-owner in the house.
I see.
Yes.
And this might be a little bit sensitive, but you mentioned some of the people who you might have been unsettled or afraid of. Were drugs used in the house a lot, frequently?
I cannot say for sure. I think my brother on occasion smoked grass. And I think on one occasion he took LSD and it really scared the bejesus out of him, and he never did it again. Julius wasn't into that scene.
Yeah.
He never did cocaine, heroin, no, he just...
But from the outside, I'd have been pedaling my bicycle and kind of seen some of the people going in and out, might have thought that.
Yes. No. Julius didn't.
That's interesting.
And I never did.
Yeah.
He told me as a young kid he'd break my arm if I ever smoked. And the only time he ever smoked cigarettes is on a press run. He would bum a cigarette from the one of the press people. Because we were always down for the press runs.
I see.
Julius learned the art of printing. So what he did with fresh paint, with a yellow yolk, a blue yolk, and a red yolk, well, you could do it like that now, digitally. But back then, you couldn't.
You had to
understand the printing process of how to do it.
Mm.
And the pressmen all loved him because, you know, they're printing brochures that are totally uninteresting or annual reports that are boring. But this was fun. They liked this.
Yeah.
And so we would always be down there. And over time, Julius learned the printing process. And I will give him mucho credit. When it turned to computers, Julius didn't know a thing about computers. We were doing cut and paste. That's how you did type. you called a photo refinisher if you wanted to take lines out of someone's face. And he learned over the years of how to do it digitally. And I'm very proud because he was, you know, he was older.
He was an older dog.
You know, and
but, new tricks, yeah.
And he did. He learned it.
Good. Okay, let's complete this part of our conversation, August 16th, 2018. And if you're willing, I'd love to do another round where we kind of talk more in this next phase. I would like to understand more kind of the everyday life as you were working and working together as partners, and just the whole thing about, I'm curious about marketing and building a clientele and international and all of that kind of stuff. So we can focus on that next time.
Okay.
So with that, I think we'll stop. And this is the end of a conversation on August 16, 2018. Tom Owen having spoken with Carol Seifert. Thank you. Seifert.
Seifert. No T.
Yes, no T. Got it. Thanks.